Greetings, human beings, and welcome to the fifth episode of Apartment 303, a podcast for community fans. My name is Dave, and alongside our co-hosts, Adam and Scott, I would like to thank all of you for tuning into this episode and for all the support and enthusiasm you guys have shown throughout our first four. If you're joining us now for the first time, welcome. Apartment 303 is a new podcast where we discuss and debate all things community, attempting to delve into each and every layer of the show, what makes it work, and why we love it. So, without further ado, let me reintroduce Scott and Adam. How's it going, guys? What have you been up to since the last podcast?
So I decided to actually follow in Adam's footsteps and go out on a little adventure to Mount Rainier for a couple days with a friend. And we explored some of the campgrounds in that area, got to do some trail running and hiking. So my soul is now at capacity. How about you, Adam?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned running because I've actually run literally every single day since our last episode. And I'm doing that in part to get ready. One of my good friends from Kentucky is getting married and I'm going to go down for the wedding. I want to be able to hang with some of those guys. One of them is a pretty elite runner, qualified for the Olympic trials in the marathon this year and ran that in Atlanta. So I can't be slacking. Their easy runs will be pretty tough for me, but it should be a good time.
Oh, I'm glad to hear you getting back into running. We got another year to get ready for Tokyo now.
So later in today's episode, we're going to take a deep dive into episode 8 from season 1, Home Economics. To kick things off, however, we're going to start with how the show ended. We've already discussed the potential of hashtag in a movie, but now I'd like us to really get into the actual ending of season 6, as well as your thoughts and feelings on what did and or should have transpired.
Yeah, and I'll kick it off from here and just give a quick shout out. There is a video on YouTube I watched from the channel Never Nothing that gave me the idea. So to be perfectly honest, I'm taking their pitch and kind of trying to run with that. It was a really well done video. We can link to it. It was just how community should have ended. And it was this one particular person's view on the best optimal way to end community in their opinion and put in all sorts of caveats about, I'm not saying I could have done this better than Dan Harmon or anything along those lines. So we'll follow that trajectory and just talk about, again, to Dave's point, how it did end, the good and the bad around that, and then what a different pitch would have been for or preferable way to having it end more organically or on a higher note perhaps. So with that all said, I'll start by saying that I think it ended exactly where it should have. And I'm pretty firm in that stance.
What do you mean where it should have? Like where the characters all landed and ended up, or as a production of the show?
Like, yeah, as a production of the show. And there are plenty of points along the way. So at the end of season 3, for instance, it could have ended there because Dan Harmon wasn't going to be coming back and being the showrunner. That would have been a logical place for the TV show to end.
Yeah, but they followed up with the best season of Community ever.
Not right away, but eventually. Yeah. So, but to your point there, there's several different places at the end of season 3, at the end of season 4, or season 5. It could have even ended
right
after
yeah.
Troy departed. That could have been a place where you would have said, oh, this is where the show should have ended. I take all of the good with the bad, and maybe this is just me being not creative enough to come up with a better place, but yeah. I contend that it ended exactly where it should have. And again, my big motif with Community is it's the anti-sitcom, and you don't get those really tied up in a or wrapped up in a bow endings, and everything's neatly organized.
You can't always get what you want.
Exactly, but you'll find sometimes you get Community, and
nice.
Yeah, I'll take that. all of the struggles of season four without Dan, and is it as funny as it was? Are things at stake anymore? So all of that plays in. And season five, losing Pierce, losing Troy. Season six, bringing in Elroy and Frankie. So and
who both nailed it. Like,
oh, absolutely. I came in as an outsider and just nailed it. Yeah, I find myself retrospecting a lot, like putting myself in my shoes when I was watching those episodes when they were new and not caring for them. But I think that was out of a place of, I just want it to be what it was.
Here's a pitch on the subject of how Community ended or should have ended. How would you have felt if they ended it on season four? Because a lot of people make the argument that that was a natural way for it to end, since Jeff graduated and was done with Greendale. He started his law practice, and it was, I guess, your normal sitcom. There's the happy ending that, you know, Jeff is also, he's back to being a lawyer again, but he learned, you know, he learned something from his time at Greendale, and now he's fighting for the little guy. Like, how would you feel if the show ended that way?
It would have been okay. You know, it's impossible for me to say, knowing what I know now, how it did and the things that continued to transpire. But yeah, that would have been the sitcom standard run of, you know, middle of the road way to end it. And there would have been some merit to it. There also is the kind of tidiness of having it take 4 years. So that's, you know, that ties in that way as well. So it would have been fine. I would have definitely, and if that had been the case, I definitely would have wanted a movie. I'll let me bounce off of you. To what extent do you think Abed's line, six seasons in a movie, propelled production into the actual sixth season?
That's a great question. I think it had a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
It had that and the fan base not being satisfied with season four. I think it kind of was the right time for Dan Harmon to kind of come back too, just for him personally.
Yeah.
It's weird, like, having something taken away from you makes you appreciate it that much more. Not to say I don't know where Dan Harmon was personally at the time, but being taken away from something he cared so much about, and also the absence of Dan Harmon for the cast, they appreciated how much he brought to the table as with his writing team and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I think it was a perfect storm of a sort of community and how this fandom has helped shape the show.
Yeah.
Is a reason why it's been able to propel forward every time. Fearing shut down after season three. And that's like, that is such the narrative of the show, is the whole time you're like, is this thing I love going to be back next year? It was a thing that kind of drove me away from watching it, because I just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. Yeah. Not only do you have the drama playing out on this show, the behind the scenes, is it actually going to happen or not?
Right. I'm going to go out on a limb. We've talked about how the show ended, and I do like, you know, the last season and the last episode are some of my favorite moments in the entire show. The thing that the person that runs Never Nothing, the point he brought up that I really struck a chord with me was how Jeff's arc had closed. And I know you and I differ on opinions, but I know it wraps everything up for him to be kind of like Jeff's growth and struggles, the things he, in ways he's changed through being changed around being with the Greendale Seven. I just wanted more from him. I wanted him to be a little more satisfied with how things were ending up. And maybe I'm reading into it a little too much. With everyone leaving, I guess too, like, Jeff was a little freaked out that this was happening, but
So let me jump in and shout out to my 11th grade English teacher here. He used a word one time in class, and the word is verisimilitude, and that's the extent to which something resembles real life. And for me, and again, this is based on personal experience, of course, I remember having graduated from graduate school, and everyone, all my friends were students in different programs, and everyone leaves, right? And then I'm there by myself to some extent. There were a couple friends who stuck around, but I can really relate to that feeling. And, you know, you see Jeff's pitches where I can't remember which pitch it was specifically, but the one where he says, and all of you will go on and leave and I'll still be here. And that's something I'm emotionally equipped to handle now.
Yeah.
That growth to me, A, if he's sincere in saying that, then that's as good of growth as I think anyone can ever hope for. But B, if he's not sincere, that's okay too. And it really gets at that feeling of, I've built this group of people up. I've become part of something. It's going to break necessarily because that's how life works. And I have to figure out how to adapt and survive. To me, that struck a chord with me, having gone through that, you know, in my personal life as well. And my favorite media, my favorite books, all end with not perfect, not everything's wrapped up. You could probably say that. I'm thinking of the movie Lost in Translation is a really good ending, where Bill Murray, whoever his character is, goes and says something to Scarlett Johansson. We have no idea what it is as the audience. And then there's just tears streaming down faces. And it's really kind of an unsettling way to end. And I like that. You have to be a little bit more creative. You have to be a little bit more daring to try and pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
So that balanced with all of the emotional roller coaster of the cast, who's going to be on this show this year? Is the show going to even happen this year? To me, really reflected the struggle that we all went on and that Jeff went on as well. And those layers is why it works for me, why it's perfect, why I wouldn't change it, all combined with the fact that I'm not that creative.
Okay. Great points all around. The only thing I feel like they failed to do after season four, and Jeff goes on to be a lawyer, and this is something, again, Never Nothing brought up, was Jeff was a really good lawyer, and for to have him fail as a lawyer just, to me, also did not make sense. And I partially am, and this is me just speculating here, I feel like that was written out as a possibility for two reasons. A, to bring back Jeff, and for Jeff to have a reason to come back to Greendale, which I think they could have done that in still a creative way. And then B, just because the hostility towards what happened in season four. I feel like that could have been the basis alone for, like, let's have him fail as a lawyer, you know? Which, when we look back at the earlier seasons, that's all, when, and we like get a view into Jeff's actual like past life, so to speak, all we hear about is how good of a lawyer he was. And I don't know, that was just something that didn't make sense to me, but
so let me float this by you then as a possible explanation for that. Suppose that his entire career as a lawyer prior to Greendale was built on being shady and built on his moral relativism, which he argues about with Duncan in the pilot. Suppose that that was all built on being less than moral in his approach. Mm-hmm. He's come to Greendale. He's found his moral scruples, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And he can't do that anymore because he's grown as a person in compassion and in empathy, and therefore is not able to do what he had done in the past. I think that's a plausible explanation for why he's not a successful lawyer.
We might be splitting hairs here and getting a little too technical. I'm going to disagree with that take entirely, because law has nothing to do with morals and ethics. It's about proving the point, and it's a skill in of itself, and I don't feel like that skill would go away.
That point is well taken. I remember back when he and Rob Corddry, whatever his character's name is, I don't remember. Tango.
Sundance?
Yeah. Okay. they said that, you know, we put so much trash back on the street, they called us the litter bugs. So the people you're trying to defend, you know, it would impact maybe which cases he selected. And in any rate, even if that were the case, it could have been more explicitly shown in the show to flesh that point out.
Fair enough.
We can agree to disagree. That's okay.
Yeah, exactly. honestly, I feel like only reason I have this stance is everyone else's stories seem to wrap up pretty nicely. So why leave Jeff out?
Again, maybe because it's Jeff's the most autobiographical character for Dan.
Okay.
That's I like that take. Thought. Yeah.
That's a good take. Yeah.
So in season one, episode 8, Jeff loses both his home and his car, and as a result is forced to move into Abed's dorm room. Meanwhile, Troy has a big date and finds help from a jealous Annie. And what is quite possibly my favorite C-plot in the entire series, Pierce becomes the keyboardist for Vaughn's band. Every plot is amazing in this episode. I don't even know where to start. Scott, do you want to take a shot?
Absolutely, Dave. It's hilarious that the previous episode of Apartment 303, we did a deep dive into the music of Community and had completely failed to mention some of the greatest songs of all time. Getting Rid of Britta and...
Pierce, you're a B.
I know you have a really, really big bombshell for me. And when do you want to throw that out?
You know, I do. And let's not bury the lead on this one. So after Scott and I had decided this is the episode that we wanted to do a deep dive, we kind of went our own ways and follow our own patterns. And I do my research, and I knew that Scott was not able to continue talking about it because he was doing something else. He was, I think, on the phone with one of his catches that he had to date. And I, knowing full well what he was up to, I texted him that I found out what I think is my absolute favorite thing ever about Community. I'll just dig right into that. And the reason I say that is because I didn't know it before. So there's a supply and demand, right? Like, obviously, if my mind could be blown again like it was watching Remedial Chaos Theory, that would be my favorite thing as it happened. So it's just the fact that this is new and novel, but again, really exemplifies everything that I love about the show. With that said, there are a couple things that other people have pointed out. I observed this on my own and then immediately went to the internet to see if they had figured it out as well. 3 minutes and 40 seconds into this episode, Abed is playing with one of the fortune tellers, you know, the paper ones, like it's featured in the title,
yeah,
which is awesome. People have pointed this part out. People knew about that. I didn't. Like, I was excited. If that was the only thing I found, it was going to be great. However, the very next episode is the one where he tells everyone's future. He is playing with a fortune teller.
Oh, my God.
It blew my mind. It blew my mind. So that's why I couldn't stop texting Scott, even though he was on the phone with his catch to date. And I couldn't keep that to myself.
Wow. That is I've never heard that detail.
Me
I've
neither.
Never heard anyone point out that detail.
Yeah. So I'm excited to hopefully be breaking that to some group of people, even if it's already been observed before.
Right. And if we're going to continue doing these deep dive episodes kind of randomly, it's probably imperative that we're thinking about what episodes follow. So kudos to you, man. I feel like you need to put a patent on that. No one in the fandom I know has pointed that out. So yeah, we got to get on that. Do you think we can profit?
Yeah, obviously. That's how we're going to make our millions, is this one detail in one niche sitcom.
That we had nothing to do with.
Absolutely. We're just pointing out someone else's brilliance. And that's actually really something that has come up a couple of different times. The world of Community in Greendale in particular are so well lived in that they seem like they could be real places. And for anyone who doesn't know, the campus is actually Los Angeles City College. I went there. It was my pilgrimage. And so you can go there, and it's a physical place that is so well thought out and so well crafted that sometimes they get details right, or fans like us will dig in really deep and find something that confirms or predicts something else that happens. Mm-hmm. And even if it wasn't intentional, it's just a symptom of the show being so well written, the characters are so well developed, that this type of thing doesn't surprise you when it does happen and when it is true.
The amount of intentional details, and the other thing I like to call either the conspiracy or coincidence? Like, was it actually intentional, or was this just an accident because this universe just has so much interconnection, I guess, and that the writing team here is just so amazing. So I have like a minor detail that I caught that is nowhere near the level that you have. Just on a rewatch, in the beginning of the episode, when Shirley says, when she's following Jeff and Britta and calls them dead air, and like, she's like, I followed the wrong couple. And then she actually starts following Annie and Troy the rest of the episode. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, how did I not see that? Like, just the call to like, oh, I made a mistake. Now I'm going to actually fix it. Just simple things.
And it's cool because there's a couple of different times in Community, some of the best action is happening in the background when Abed delivers the baby is a prime example. And they do that a couple of times. And this was a really interesting case of that as well. And you touched on the story of Shirley helping Annie deal with not being able to pursue Troy because he's going on a date with Randy, which can be the name of a boy or a girl, and is very much parts of this episode. And we can get into that in a minute, but you are excited as well to do the deep dive into this specific episode. What jumped out at you other than, you know, that minor detail you mentioned?
So what I found at the heart of this episode is, and something I really didn't think about again until this rewatch, the heart of the episode is the connection between Jeff and Abed.
Yes.
And I never really thought about how the lack of a father was something that really bridged these two together. And I feel like the rest of the series almost ignores it a little bit. And that relationship kind of gets lost. It's almost like, you know, we've talked about how Jeff is kind of a micro, has a micro control of the group, and Abed has more of a macro control on the big outcomes for the group.
As further evidenced by him using the fortune teller.
The fortune teller, and also using Britta to kind of help influence Jeff. Spoiler alert, out of moving out of Abed's apartment.
Yeah.
Even though it's something, and this is such a great line, Abed's line on Jeff living with him, it's great for me, but bad for him. And to be able to say that as a friend and like, truly realize that even though I want this person's company and them to be around me, it's not good for his future.
And another example of that caring is when Abed talks about how Jeff is Goldie Hawn and overboard. And Jeff asks, can I not be Kurt Russell in this scenario? Abed's response, which is sage-like wisdom far beyond his years, is you can do whatever you want. You just have to know what that is.
Yes.
It's like, man, he's a life coach. He's a friend. He's a shaman. Again, to quote Jeff in the pilot episode.
That is really the heart of the episode. Even though it's the A story, I didn't see that heart until I actually did this rewatch. One minor detail that I caught, ice cream being a super important part of the Harmon universe.
Yep.
We got soft serve with Jeff and Abed, and that's right before Abed discusses with Britta, like, you need to help me get Jeff out of my apartment and use your lady parts.
You said it exactly right, Scott, saying the heart of the episode. And this entire episode is filled with a ton of heart, because when Shirley says to Annie, I've got a couple lines of dialogue written down here, after she is continuing to help Troy with his date with Randy, Shirley says, tell that boy how you feel. And Annie says, if he's not interested, I could lose the friendship too. And Shirley says, you could. Love is a gamble always, but waiting won't change the dice. Which, again, is really heartfelt. These aren't throwaway lines. They're not anything like that. And in last episode mentioned how much Yvette Nicole Brown would be one of the people that I would like to, you know, meet and work with. And this is really at the heart of that. And it really demonstrates how kind and caring of a person she is and surely can be. And that's just really heartening. And again, speaks to the levels of character development that make this world of Community so well lived in.
Yeah. Other details I picked up, cameo Patton Oswalt.
Oh God, such a great cameo. I love Patton Oswalt so much.
him, oh my gosh, him giving Troy the condoms, nice. I mean,
there are so many good lines in this episode. Jeff has two of them. Sorry to derail us here.
Go for it, man.
But when Jeff is trying to, he's saying, you know, his condo board is bluffing by listing his places available. And Britta says, yeah, you need to move on with your life. Yeah, shmoo shmon, shmoo shmai shmoon shmife. That line gets me every time because it's just so second grade and it's so not Jeff. And the other one that Jeff says is when he's on the phone trying to, you know, liquidate his assets and sell his original Spider-Man.
I was just about to ask. Oh, I was like, what? I'm like, the guy has this power and strength of a spider. I'm like, is he trying to sell his comic books or something? Like,
yeah, that's what he's doing. And then we don't hear what's said on the other line. But Jeff says, no, your incredulity plexes me, nerd. That just straight to my funny bone every time. And
And then Abed calls him a nerd at the end of the episode.
He does, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the next point I was going to make, just further makes the similarity argument between Jeff and Abed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, totally cut you off. Pick up.
No, it's fine. I've got nothing.
I got
but
excited
my...
about those lines. I told everyone that I'm part Annie, and this is exactly why and how.
Exactly. So I did not catch this other minor detail because I actually wore headphones this watch. And when Pierce and Vaughn are fighting over whether they should play getting rid of Britta anymore, and Vaughn ends up leaving and like unplugs his amp, there's actually audible amp feedback when Vaughn leaves, yeah, like after the fact. And I was just like, wow, they actually had an amp plugged in for him to be playing and have that audio play out as he played himself out.
And as he's doing that, he is leaving in a huff in an argument, and he still takes the time to say goodbye three different ways. And it's just that commitment to that bit is so great. And I love it.
And there are some worries, man. Worries.
Yeah. So, and I think now's a perfect time to transition into the Britta, Pierce, and Vaughn aspect of the episode.
Please do.
Which, of course, is the namesake of the title of this episode of our podcast. And I just have to say, this is one of my all-time favorite tie-ins because, again, could be on purpose, could be accident, could be happenstance, but Chevy Chase acts in Paul Simon's music video, You Can Call Me Al.
What?
And it's amazing. Like, I like that video on its own. Say what you will about the song. I know Dave hates that song. That's okay. That's okay. But the fact that he then, Chevy in Community as Pierce, aligns himself so vehemently with Paul Simon is just so perfect. Then, you know, when the line comes up about Vaughn says that Pierce is garfunkling him, or vice versa. That's how
vice
that
versa.
Yeah, and just that line about garfunkling me is just, to use garfunkel as a verb is my favorite use, I think, of the entire English language.
Anything else on that storyline aside from getting two great songs out of it? And actually, if we're gonna say two and an additional third at the end of the episode with Pierce's rap.
Yeah, those are all great. I really love this version of Britta. It's my favorite. Well, her as a character, where she's this strong, independent woman, and she's not like kind of a bumbling mockery of her ideals, and she does it in a really authentic way. And again, has some just terrific lines calling out people. The first one that came up to me was, she says, guys, what the hell, that song was disrespectful to me and the definition of rhyme scheme. And it's so great to see her have that wit and to be able to speak power to those people and to be funny without being the butt of a joke. And this is a really good example of that. She also says,
it's such a departure from the later episodes are such a departure from this Britta version of Britta.
And season one Britta is definitely my favorite for all of those reasons. The other line that she says to Jeff once he says, oh, I think you're into me, after Britta goes and gets his Italian faucets. Mm-hmm. Her line is, I beg your unbelievable pardon. And that's such a great line. It's such a strong line. It's not like you're telling me what to do. It's like, I'm my own person.
The last thing, and I feel like this is bigger than anything we've mentioned so far. we get the line that is the beginnings of the greatest conspiracy theory ever, that Vaughn murders Pierce.
Because, dun,
dun, dun. Because Vaughn tells Pierce that it is not over. Actually, after we don't see Vaughn after season one, do we?
No, we don't, because he gets a hacky sack scholarship to some right. community college in Delaware. And he was going to go with him.
I mean,
or does it, and ends up coming back.
By the time Vaughn can graduate college or community college, which is only 2 years. But anyways, let's say 4 years. That was about the time that Pierce would have been.
Yeah. No, and that's another Apartment 303 original take there.
That's pretty much all I really had for this episode. I don't know if we should start diving into season two episodes yet, but when we do, I got a good one. I got a few really good ones. So
got a real doozy in the chamber there.
Real doozies in the chamber.
Maybe just one other thing here. So one of the other things I really enjoy about this episode and how it sets up character development is by taking one common sitcom trope of a classic misunderstanding, wherein most of the time both characters involved are in the dark and they don't understand what's going on and they have other preconceived notions about what's actually happening. So early on, Annie is talking to Troy, mm-hmm. who he is trying to ask for advice to ask Randy out for a date. Annie thinks she's talking about him, but they resolve that part of it. So in a normal sitcom, the rest of the episode would progress with Annie thinking that Troy had the hots for her. The only payoff would be the punchline at the end when Troy was with Randy. Mm-hmm. But this is done differently in a way that I really like, because Annie finds out in the very, you know, first scene of the episode that Troy is planning to pursue somebody else. And that allows us to get the back and forth between Annie and Shirley. And it really helps develop both of those characters. So yeah. It's a nod at something. This is something that generally happens in sitcoms. It's just different enough while still being similar enough, and really plays out for that character development, which most of season one is fueled, I would argue, by character development. That's what sets it apart from a show like How I Met Your Mother or The Big Bang Theory, for example.
All right, let's leave it there for today. We'd like to take this time to thank each and every one of you for tuning in and invite you to join us in our next episode, where we will be discussing episode 9 from season 2, Conspiracy Theories and Interior Design, as well as trying to answer the question, which character from another show would best fit into the study group? Apartment 303 is now available on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you enjoy your podcasts. If you have suggestions for the show or would like to collaborate, you can reach us at apt303@gmail.com. For Adam and Scott, this is Dave signing off. We will see you in episode 6.